Hello, my fans, friends. Welcome to the Rich Herring podcast feed, powered by Acast Plus. Thanks to everyone who's come to see the Can I Have My Ball Back tour so far. It's been going really well. I've got a 4-star review in The Standard, 4-star review in The Telegraph, who once called me the worst comedy experience of the year, so that's a turnaround. People have been coming, people have really been enjoying it, and it's getting better and better. The only gigs this week are both in Pocklington, the town I was born in, near York. There's a couple of tickets left for the evening show and a few more tickets left for the matinee, I think about 4:30. But love to see you there, Yorkshire. Pop along. Check richardherring.com/ballback/tour or richardherring.com/gigs to see if I'm coming near to you. There are tickets left for nearly every show in the tour. I think Norwich has sold out. And a couple of gigs in London could do with your support as well. Anyway, please listen to the podcast. Do spread the news about the podcast to your friends. Listen as much as you can. Numbers are slightly down, which may affect the future of this podcast. So just leave it playing, even if you're not in the room. Love you. Now sit back, relax, and enjoy whatever it is you're going to listen to.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Life is full of what-ifs. Some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Leicester Square Theatre. Please welcome a man who just tried to sneak out a fart in Cafe Nero, but unfortunately it made a big sound. But luckily the woman behind him had her headphones on. It's Richard Herring! Thank you very much. Didn't hear it, she might have smelt it though. It was smelly. Hello, welcome to Rich Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast. Lovely to see you all. Though I was hanging around with Blackpink. Pretty cool. Huh? By the time this goes out, they won't be cool anymore. So it's still... They call it Rahulastapa, so... Yeah, thanks very much. Lovely to be here. I've been... I might ask the guests about their most embarrassing fart. It was slightly embarrassing to... when you think you just sneak one out, Andy, you know. You never snuck one out. It always makes a noise. Never farted, wow. You must have you on as a guest sometime. Find out about that. This week, I went to my school, my kids' school sports day on Friday. And right in my school, my son who's he's 5, coming on 6, and he was in they did a quick race first of all. But he fell over right near the start. All the sixes were cheering his name before he started. It got too much for him. He fell over. And then it reminded me when I was exactly the same age, I was in a sports day and I was in a race. And we had to race the tree and back. And I fell over and I was dazed. And then I got up and the kids were way ahead. And I ran and overtook them all and I won the race. It was amazing. So this is going to be history repeating itself. My son got back up, everyone cheered him, then he ran a bit further, then he had a nosebleed and had to stop. So Then he did another, a slightly longer race where they were meant to go around the perimeter of the track, and he set off at a real pace, but he kind of went that way. And so it was Forrest Gump, is how it was just went. But there we go. But there might be something in that, so we'll find out if that becomes the merged question. I'm nearly 56 years old. I know I don't look it. Stop shouting now. It's embarrassing. My birthday next week, I think. I'm not really thinking about it too much. I think we should have birthdays every 1,000 days. I think it comes. The birthdays come along and Christmas. I think it should be every 1,000 days. Then it's something. That means I would be just over 20 now. Though it does mean my wife... Yeah, maybe I better... It was bad enough. It was bad enough in normal numbers, let alone... anyway, look, we've got two fantastic guests for you, and I don't want to waste your time with me. Do come and see us on tour, richardhoney.com/Rahulastupa for all the dates coming up. Thank you for coming today. There are more dates here at Leicester Square Theatre as well. My guest this week, they're probably best known as the writer on Dick and Dom's Funny Business and Ham Hands in Danger Mouse. Oh, that's weird. Will you please welcome Lawrence Rickard and Ben Wilbon, ladies and gentlemen? Here they are. Thank you very much. Come in. Make space. Make some space. I can put this on my... Just poke myself in the eye there.
Hello.
Lovely to see you. What are Dick and Dom like in real life? I've met them, but...
Terrible.
Yeah.
Awful. You wouldn't know it to see them on the telly. They actually bombed the bungalow. They're absolutely lovely, I'm afraid to say. I wish that I had better stories about them, but they're just... really, really nice and friendly. Mm. And
did you come up with bogeys for them? That was
no bogeys pre-existed. I mean, as a format, also a thing.
Okay,
not mine.
You didn't invent bogeys.
No.
And Ham Hands are a big part of this podcast, and they predated.
Oh boy.
The reboot of Danger Mouse, and you actually played.
Yes, I did. And
can you tell us about him?
So the note was recording this big animation series which had a lot of American money involved, and there was this guy in a studio in my earphones, and he just kept saying, "Oh, that's not quite right, I don't know, it's quite off-putting," because you'd say, "Look, I'm doing the voices, what do you want?" And then he couldn't quite get it, and then eventually the producer said, "I think he wants you to do it like David Mitchell." I went, so two thoughts there. You couldn't get David Mitchell. And here's my best David Mitchell impression. Which, yeah.
Yeah, that's nice.
Yeah.
If you had to choose between having a hand made out of ham and an armpit that dispensed sun cream, which would you choose? They ripped off...
It's the ham hand.
Ham hand's pretty good.
Definitely.
So, look, you guys, did you know each other before Horrible Histories was Horrible Histories?
Feels like it.
Oh.
Feels like
it. You have to say that. Yeah. No, we were not married previously. Much to my regret. We met on... I was writing... So I'd been in it sort of a year before Ben, because we'd started developing it quite early. And okay. I was writing on it. And I think... Did you audition with one of my scripts?
I did. I auditioned with one of your brilliant scripts. And then figured out who you were because of the script. And then hung around with the rest of the original cast in a little group and went... I think that's him over there. The writer of these brilliant scripts.
I was probably in the corner shushing my hair, right?
Yeah, I was doing that. Then eventually, Larry got sort of co-opted into performing, because we, you know, if you hung around long enough on set, or obviously somebody eventually would come up and say, stick this guy in a Roman outfit. We haven't got enough people in the background.
It was pretty much that. Yeah. I think I was supposed to be playing I was supposed to be playing parts when makeup changes meant the proper actors weren't able to do it. And then I came up with the idea of Bob Hale, which were just like, they were like, we need lots of context, but you can't fit loads of context in like 3 minutes. And I was like, watch me. And so I wrote these things, and I was like, if you just say it really, really fast, you won't get it all, but you'll get a gist. And they went, you couldn't give all of that writing to anyone. I was like, someone will do it. And they go, you do it. And so I sort of, I remember meeting Ben. I remember we were at, I want to say, not Ham House, it was where you were doing the Tudors song. Do you remember that?
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah.
It'll come back to me.
Yeah, no, it will.
Hatfield House.
Thank you. And
That's when I had to make a decision about... It was the first day.
Yeah.
And they said, you're doing Henry VIII. What's the voice?
Yeah.
Again, it's the voice conversation. I went, I don't know, I'll do it like this. I went, well, okay, off you go.
Yeah.
And then after I'd done that, I thought, oh, shit, I've made that decision. That's got to be him now.
Yeah.
And got it fit.
I remember you were on the lunch bus and Caroline, a producer, I came on with her because I was just doing, rewrites. And Ben was dressed as Henry VIII. And then when this is Ben, I went over and he was sort of sat, it was really hot that day. And he was sat at the window dressed as Henry VIII. And I went, hi, how are you? And he went, oh. And that's kind of been our relationship for 15 years.
Kind of has, yeah. A little bit sighy.
Yeah.
Just annoyed that you did a show called Horrible Histories and had to dress up as historical characters. Didn't expect that would happen. But that way, I mean, it was obviously an amazing show and a very and still on. My kids still watch that. So it's enjoyed by generations of children. Yeah. But has led on to creating this... I mean, you're sort of the Monty Python of our generation, would you say? I think it's fair to say.
I'm trying to work out which one of us is going to go on to be awful, I think.
Yeah, that's what I was going to... I've got that written down. Who's going to be John Cleese? Because at the beginning of Monty Python, that's the best one to be.
Right, yeah. If we'd have asked that question 10 years ago, I would have been going, me. Now I'm like, probably Farnaby.
Yeah,
Farnaby. No, Farnaby's idle because he never turns up.
Yeah, he really doesn't turn up.
It's this very exciting, you know, it is this dynamic team and you've done all these different series. I mean, more than Monty Python has done really, but and films. So it is and going that way, isn't it?
We're still waiting to be paid in yachts. It's not forthcoming.
Well, they seem to just complain about not having any money all the time, but I think it's to do with marrying too many people, maybe. Yeah,
I think so. You guys have married too many people. Stop it.
We are trying to marry a bare minimum of people, aren't we?
Give down to one.
Yeah,
two.
That's
maybe
ideal.
Two, maybe two.
Yeah.
If one of them dies, two.
Yeah. I mean, that's different. God. It's one of those things. It's relatively early on, because there were like six of us, I suppose, and we got that comparison, and it's sort of really nice and tremendously embarrassing, and we never kind of know quite how to respond to it. We feel like every time someone says it, we have to like send John Cleese a tenner. You know? Sorry about that. Sorry, I keep saying that.
And is there, you know, because obviously Python, I mean, you have moved into films, but Python obviously moved exclusively into films. Is that something that now, I mean, now you've obviously had successes all along the way, but now the success of Ghosts must mean there's more appetite for that? Because I thought the film you did, the Shakespeare film, was fantastic, but didn't really get the credit it deserved.
There's a really boring story behind that.
Okay.
To do with film finance, which I'm not going to bring out now.
I think Matt might have told us that.
He told you, didn't he? Yeah, he did. But yeah, it's lovely. It's a lovely idea, but you know what? It's putting a film together and actually getting... I'm going into the film finance conversation. It is incredibly difficult in this country. It just is. And there's a lot of nervousness around... It's why you get so many... executives crowding around going, is it funny though? And after a while you're going, look, can you just give it a chance? Can we just, like, we've done loads of read-throughs here, can you just...
I think as well, the model of film finance has changed a lot just in the time we were doing it. I think, I remember talking recently about with Rich, who directed a Shakespeare film, and he was sort of saying even like a year later, it probably wouldn't have existed. Like now, you can make a film for 5p, or you can make a film for a bazillion pounds, and there's kind of no model in the middle, particularly in this country, so it's...
I think I'm going to have to start doing my own stunts. I mean, I do my own stunts. But I think I'm going to have to start jumping off buildings like Tom Cruise to attract the kind of finance.
With your knees?
Yeah. Crazy. Crazy talk. I wonder what Tom Cruise's knees are like.
Well, they're all right for now. But I mean, yours. I've followed you down a flight of stairs. And
it's true.
I mean, it's true. The view's nice, but I don't like the sounds.
Oh, my God. This guy.
Well, let's talk a little bit about Ghosts. We'll talk a little bit about it for the next hour and a half. right, I've got some questions about Ghosts. I have to say, as I was saying to you backstage, my daughter, who's 8 years old, is a huge fan, and she comes down when she's meant to be in bed, and if she knows I'm, especially if my wife's out, because she knows I can't make her go back to bed, and says, can we watch Ghosts? So we've watched... pretty much all of Ghosts and all the US Ghosts as well. She's a massive fan. It's lovely to watch it with her, though she does keep on talking about being sucked off now, which is is problematic.
Yeah, it's become an issue.
Luckily, I don't think she understands what's going on. My question is, right, and I've seen people ask us on the internet, but I haven't seen a satisfactory answer. The ghosts are not allowed to leave the boundaries...
Here we go.
..of Button House.
Right.
But Robin predates the boundaries of Robin of Button House. So yes. Why can't he go wherever the fuck he wants? Because there was no... And why a ghost obeying maps and stuff?
I,
ladies and gentlemen, Lance Rickard.
Good evening. So, ghost physics. Let's talk about it.
You see Robin stop at the gates.
Yes.
You've seen Julian go through and come back.
Yeah.
You've seen them kick Humphrey's head along the side.
Yeah.
So it runs parallel. But the only time you ever see Robin actually going somewhere and being forced back is in a boundary that none of the other ghosts go to. Okay. So is he obeying the same boundaries as the other ghosts? Or is it the homestead as it was when he died?
Why do they...
We don't know, is the answer, all right?
All right, you found us out.
we're writing a book at the moment about ghosts.
Yeah.
And the vagaries... When we were making a television series where we're like, but they never really say that in dialogue, we get away with it. When you have to write it all down and then kind of live with it. Oh, my goodness, it's been a...
Yeah, bummer. I mean, look. You've got to roll with it.
Yeah, I agree. You do.
I'm sorry. If you dig into... If you just would start digging into, like, the A-Team, that is a reference no one here would get...
Are you saying it won't hold up logically, the A-Team, if I...
Just go, hang on a minute. How old is... No, I don't...
Right, my son, when he was four, woke me up at 5 o'clock in the morning with a question about ghosts in general, which you may be able to answer. I have asked your other compatriots of this as well, see what you come with. He woke me up and he said, Daddy, do ghosts have bum holes? Can you answer that one for me?
We've had to do some very clever grading on a couple of shots to make sure that question remains a mystery.
I think in our world they do.
Yeah.
In our...
They do, because there's a shot where Julian drops a glass and bends over, and I think from the reaction of the other ghosts, you assume...
But he's got no trousers. Really... You can take your clothes off.
Yeah, but they reappear.
But they reappear.
So if you took your clothes off, we would be able to see
right,
a bum hole.
Okay. If we decide at any point ever to do any more, we'll have a scene where everyone takes their clothes off and makes each other's bum holes. If that's what you want...
Can you zoom in on everyone's bum hole? Yeah. And then I can see... There you go, Ernie.
Short series. But...
Now, I was promised a part in what is... I thought would be the next series, but it's turned out to be the final series. I said that... I was prepared to kill myself in order to be an actual ghost. So it's a good job I didn't do it, isn't it? Because
was that Matt and Jim?
Yeah.
Yeah, you can't trust them. Yeah.
They encouraged me to kill myself.
They promised so much.
Now, between the two of you as well, do you regret your choice when you came up with this idea? I'll be a caveman who has to go in.
Ben doesn't regret his choice.
I'll just be a bloke in
one moment in my life where I thought, if I do that and grow a moustache, no one will have to touch my face.
I remember
World War II, please.
Series 4, when we've been shooting We're Not Alone and you'd had to shave your moustache. Yeah. And so we had a fake moustache, as everyone spotted immediately.
they did.
Brilliant though it was, it's just not yours. There was a moment on set where we sat down in the green room and you were sort of doing up your lip and you went, honestly, this bloody moustache... And then you realised you were... not...
Sorry, mate.
Yeah.
They always do makeup tests when you... when you start anything with facial hair, they do a little test. First time they stuck that fake one on, it was so low. It was like down here. It was like, what are you doing? Well, I think that looks great. No, what? I mean, I look like sort of Burt Reynolds for a bit. It's like, what are we doing? This is never going to work. Had a bit of a panic.
And when I read you all got together after Yonderland to come up with whatever this next idea was going to be and had like days of working out ideas, and Ghost was one of the first things you came up with.
Yeah, but it was the first. It was really early.
Yeah,
and then we laughed about loads of it, and then we were trying to make the story work and give it stakes. And you go, well, they don't need money, and they're dead, and it doesn't. And so we just parked it and went on to other things. A couple of things we really got a long way down the road with. And we just kept going. That Ghost thing was funny, wasn't it? And then, yeah, we sort of, once we'd hit on kind of two things, Mike and Alison being able to give it stakes because they needed to worry about money and not dying and things like
sure.
that. And the kind of making a virtue of how banal their existence is and the fact they just argue over who gets which bedroom and watches what they get to watch on TV. And so it kind of it eventually came together. But, yeah, it was an early idea. But to kind of get to the point where he ironed out the creases took a really long time.
Yeah. I mean, there were some other great ideas. We could pitch them to you now.
Yeah, but. I was going to ask what they were because I might nick them. You nearly threw Ghost. Yeah, we won't do that one. Yeah. Let's think of something else.
There was all sorts.
Don't pitch it.
I was looking at you and you were going with your eyes.
Was there the one that was just terrible and wouldn't have worked?
Oh my god! Yeah, I mean,
we're very good.
Yeah, I mean, there's loads of me just going, "What if?" It's like, no, okay, no, you're right. You're probably right.
I mean, it's great because it's, you know, that's what a sitcom needs to be: people trapped together in a
It's kind of a
distilled version of a sitcom. Yeah. They're really, it's different. Yeah, people who are very unalike trapped together, and we go, they're the most unalike that any people can be, trapped in the most definite way ever. So it's sort of, people are like, oh, it's a bit off the wall. And you go, well, no, it's kind of died in the wall, really.
Yeah. Mm. And do you think the fact Robin's been there for so long, it means that he's never going to get sucked off?
Did you never see the episode with Mary? I'm so sorry.
Sorry, guys. Sorry about that. Oh, God. I'm really sorry about my friends.
I don't know. I think, but we were really early on, we kind of said, and put it into dialogue, that there is no rhyme or reason to it. We wanted to get away from that sense of, there was kind of an assumption that you would do a good deed and then that would be you going over to the afterlife. And we were like, if that becomes a format and you get tied to it so quickly. And so we said, you never know and there's no reason to it.
Yeah.
And then kind of when Mary got sucked off, it was like our way of going, see,
yeah.
We told you. So after all this time, we kind of never knew with Robin, you know, even though it's been several thousand years, it could be tomorrow.
Or
who knows if he makes it through series five? I mean, who can say?
Or if he gets a part in Ted Lasso, then
yeah.
Then suddenly, wow!
All the original ghosts have been sucked up and replaced with other actors.
It's a terrific series, and we have watched the first series of the American one, which we enjoyed as well. It is quite different. Are you enjoying, you're executive producers of it and obviously involved in it.
Right at the forefront, fighting the battle.
Yeah.
We did, for the pilot and for the, first season, we would get all the first cuts and you look at it. And it was weird because you're looking at something that originated in our writer's room. Sort of going through a kind of weird filter, and you understand all those decisions as well because they're writing for a very specific audience. They have a very different history, and so it all goes through that filter. But they do it in that way where it becomes a CBS product without wishing to sound too corporate, but it does. It becomes a something that they produce and very American in its.
I mean, they were
execution.
Very sort of, from the get-go, I mean, they said, we really love this show. What we're not doing is, oh, there's something in the idea. It doesn't really work, but leave it to us. We'll fix it. They were like, we really want this. We want to make the version of this that works with make American history, captures its DNA, and we will find the archetypes that fit within the framework of American history. And that's sort of exactly what they did. I mean, the showrunners were
incredible.
True to their world, true to their word. And you know, I think from really early on, once we'd seen that the format and the tone that they'd put on it was going to work, you kind of, it was really tempting to go, okay, let's pore over every single word. But you go, the more deeply we get involved, the greater the danger of it just becoming our show again.
Yeah.
And you go, we've already made our version. It becomes pointless if we kind of just get our crowbars out and go, no, make it more like ours. You go, well, you know, make your version. I think they've done a really,
yeah, they have.
Really good job. They must have done. I mean, it's ridiculously huge. They've all got yachts.
Yeah, they have. They get paid in yachts. But they are, the two showrunners, two Joes, they are incredibly experienced. And they not, I think I'm right in saying they'd not got a show away, or at least not one on that scale. And it was just really lovely to see them succeed in that way, because yeah. their pilot script was amazing. All the writing samples that they were sending through beforehand were incredible. And you just go, this is going to be, it's going to be great. You're going to do a really good job. And they have. And they are astonishing.
I remember reading that we got sample script from something they'd written that never got made. And it was just, we sat around the table reading it, and we were like, this is brilliant.
These guys are really
Let's
clever.
Fire them and then hire them to write this.
Is there anything that you wish you'd done in your version, or is there stuff that you wanted to take across?
We sort of avoided going too deep into the series while we were still making it because of that reason. We didn't want to start making things because we saw it and went, oh, that would work for us.
Yeah,
and equally, if we'd come up with an idea, we didn't want to go, oh, but we can't do that because they have, you know, because we didn't want to change the way that we approach the show. You know,
yeah, they're two very, very separate entities, really. But they, the first season, they really have mind. But bear in mind, they do 22 episodes. So they've already now shot more than we will ever shoot. So they're going to have to reach, you know, the beauty is of doing six or seven, a series, I'm going to call it a series, is that we, you know, we can sort of hold story in a different way. Their story engine, if you like, is just running overtime. So they've got to throw so much material and so many ideas in.
That
inevitably the rules are going to bend and the world is going to expand and they're going to have, you know, many more characters coming and knocking on the door.
Yeah. Their story engine is a big V8 American muscle car, and ours is a mini metro.
It is a mini metro, you're right.
You know, reliable. It's
very reliable.
Well, it's interesting to see a bigger budget version of, which is part of the difference, isn't it?
They've got
there's a lot more money. They can have a lot more actors. I think it's interesting to see, as I was saying backstage, but it's interesting to see the seller people played by different people, which kind of, you know, it's nice and ghosts that you play them, but it also kind of makes it, takes you out of the reality of it a little bit as well in some ways, doesn't it?
We've always loved doing multi-character.
Yeah.
That's what we've always done. But that was the way that we went. Yeah. Or we can do a little bit of that.
We did. Yeah. Well, we made a pilot that was never transmitted. That was the deal. It wasn't like they went, this is terrible, don't put it on telly. We sort of went, could we, you know, work out what this is? And in that, we were all playing multiple characters and there were about 100 ghosts in there.
Right.
We made something unfilmable, basically. And then we looked at it and went, that doesn't work. It should be a distilled, you know, it should be a family.
Yeah.
We were just not related.
Yeah.
And I'd
like to see that though. You're going to put that on DVD extra. It's like the pilot of Blackadder has just gone out 40 years later. 40 years' time. When you're dead, can we put it out?
Yeah. Exactly. When Ben's dead, we'll put it out.
Yeah. Can Tony Robinson introduce it as well though?
Yeah. Oh, God. Can you imagine? I can't imagine.
We'll play it at your.
Honestly, we've done so much filming together. We have had those discussions, and I often bring up and go, "Listen, guys, if I go first, can you?" And there's a whole list of things. I'm going to write it down. I'll write it down. I'll make a will.
A will? Yeah, you should. You should.
I have already made a will, but I'm going to add that on. There's going to be tricksy stuff in there for you, Mister.
And so you've made the decision that this is the series you've just finished is going to be the last series.
Oh. Yeah, we locked the last episode today.
Right.
And it feels very weird. Feels very weird.
Can you tell us everything that happens in this
series? Yeah, sure. So, episode one.
Imagine if we did that. Nothing.
And then it looked weird. The podcast went really weird. He just talked through every beat of every episode for 35 minutes.
What was the reason? Because obviously you could have gone for on and on, as you say. There's lots of ideas and there's lots of things you could do.
Yeah, the real reason is that I'm the next Batman. So we can't. I'm contracted now, and I can't do any more of this.
Well, Michael Keaton was too young, wasn't he?
Yeah. Because I've got to go from here now. I mean, we're joking about it, but I've got to go from here now. I've got to get on a flight to Hollywood and get into training. And I'm not Batman. I'm not Batman.
No, we sort of. I think we kind of thought if we don't do it now, we never will. We'll keep doing it and keep doing it until it stops being good, or people stop wanting to see it as much, or it becomes a bit of a shadow itself, or it finds a smaller audience, and then they go, "Can you stop making it now?" And it just sort of we loved it too much, and the response from the audience has been something we never expected, and we never wanted to feel like we were offering a substandard product. You know, and there's always that danger when you keep writing and keep writing. And I think also, you know, it made us think about it when Ben started to have trouble with his knees.
I was starting to try and sort of put a pitch on what you were saying then, and I think it's this. It's a Pixar pitch.
I mean, I can talk for myself, but
sometimes when you love something so much, you've got to learn to let it go. Huh? There's your pitch.
Yeah. It's a difficult. It is, but it's difficult, you know. And I completely understand the reasoning.
Yeah.
But I still feel I don't. I think you're a way away from. I mean, it might be sensible to do it early, just in case. But
I don't know if you look at my hair in the first series. I mean, and there is that now.
When you go, the ghosts die and they don't change. Apart from that one.
Who's clearly trying to control his weight, and his Thomas, hair has died.
Is Thomas wearing a wig now? Why is Thomas wearing a wig? The only difference it made to me is that each year it's 10 minutes less in makeup.
It could
by
turn
series
out that,
20, I don't have any.
It could turn out that the captain wasn't dead all along. He's just pretending to be a ghost.
Could be. Oh my God.
Brilliant twist. Well, you know, it's difficult, isn't it? Because then, I mean, I presume you're going to move on to one of your other ideas from that pitch meeting, or have another pitch. Are you going to carry on working as a team, or have you had enough of each? I know you're all, but you've all. What's great about the whole gang is you're all doing your own things as well, and you've got your own.
Yeah, I mean,
stuff.
The guys are doing their own stuff, and that's great. It's been a really slow summer. I've had some auditions. They haven't called back.
But they've got those tapes forever.
They do.
Ben, you've got the longest showreel I've ever seen of anyone on your website. So you're getting plenty of jobs.
Yeah, I mean, is it length or quality that matters? I forget.
Wow. A low blow. Noted. It will come back to get you.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, "What the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass!" So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do it. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us. MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Let's talk about school sports days for a little bit, just because I was mentioning that. Do you remember, like, either as a parent watching your kids, or do you remember them as a kid? Do you have any memories of sports?
Oh, my God. At my school, sports days involved a Seeking helicopter landing on the playing fields.
Right.
Was at a very military school. Every year, a massive yellow helicopter would land on the playing field, and various military people come out. They'd be saluting. There'd be a big. It's basically track. It was basically like an Olympic. You know, there's javelins. There was track and field, discus, medals, and then the winners would get to fly in the helicopter.
I think I went to a different school.
Did you ever get to fly in the helicopter?
I got to fly in the helicopter.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
We got a police helicopter, but it wasn't sports day.
I mean, it was absurd.
But I got them.
It was absurd. And then cut to 8 years later, and I deliberately, at my children's sports day, put a knee brace on, wore my shorts, put a knee brace on, and went, "Okay, guys, it's the dad's race." I went, "Oh, it's no." Because I can't stand competitive dads, and they're all competitive dads.
Yeah.
And they all sprint really hard. Last year, one guy sprinted so hard, he pulled up about, 10 yards from the end with clearly a very bad hamstring injury. I was like, "What are you doing? You're a 40-something man sprinting against other men who think they have to sprint against each other. What are you doing?"
I love it. They kind of go, "God, I was fine last year." And you go, "Yeah, the last time you ran was a year ago." That tells you the problem.
And then the Sea King helicopter lands and takes them all away.
Luckily, they didn't do a parents' race, which I was pleased with. Because I'm quite a bit older than all the other parents.
That's all right.
I'm probably 30 years older than some of the parents.
Yeah, it's exhausting. But no, it was a very jolly event. Everyone gets medals as well.
Yeah, everyone got medals.
Everyone gets medals.
Yeah. Any memories of... Were you a sporty youngster?
I don't know.
Wow.
He had to jack it all in, became a writer instead. But he was at Olympic level, GB, Team GB.
Yeah, I'm pretty sporty.
Yeah.
If I put on a T-shirt, my partner goes, "It looks like a costume on me," and I don't know why. I got for a while, well, just after we did Bill, and I had to pick up a sword and I needed a hand. I decided to get a personal trainer, and I turned up on my first day, and my personal, like, shorts and a T-shirt, my trainer went, "Like, you don't even know that this isn't right." No, I don't know. My mum hates it, because whenever they ask about it, whenever they go, "Oh, do you remember when we did that?" I've got, like, no recollection of my childhood.
Okay.
And my brother's the same.
Okay.
And so they're like, "We did all of this lovely stuff, and neither of you buggers remember." Apparently, I was relatively quick. I know I played rugby for a while. And why is people laughing when I said, "I can be quick"? I played rugby for a while because I was so stupid that they'd be like, "Put him in the path of Brian Goldring, who's big. He won't stop him, but it'll slow him down." And I did, and I would slow him down enough for a better boy to get hold.
That's a role.
Don't say, "Ah, I'm fine." I was really quick and I was brave and I played rugby. That's the take home.
Okay. Very
Thank
good.
Thank you. Yes, applause. Yes.
And based on my experience, these are two new emergency questions. I think there might be something in that sports day one. Based on my embarrassment in Cafe Nero today, what's the most embarrassing occasion on which you have broken wind? It's off when you become an old man and you can't, you think, "Oh, I could just sneak one out," and then it makes a big noise.
I
had headphones on as well, and I heard it.
Remind me of the Nero.
I was just sitting in Cafe Nero, but there was a woman sitting pretty much directly behind me.
Hard
and
by.
I thought I could sneak one out. And then it made a noise. And then I thought, oh, no. And then I turned around, but she had her headphones in, so it was all right.
Result.
It was all right.
Nothing worse.
Then somebody else.
When your bum goes, it's okay, it's only going to be a whisper. I don't know why my bum is really shears me. Sorry, Reese. Jesus.
It's going to be
my bum is really
I'm it's only right, going to whisper. Don't worry about
it's
it.
It's a little whisper.
I'm going to shout.
Oh, God.
This has been really highbrow.
Real.
We started very highbrow.
We started with bum holes and we've got to bum holes.
Yeah.
It's amazing how it all comes full circle.
It does.
Ladies and gentlemen, I am retiring.
I'll ask you an emergency question that AI created. This is the only good one that AI has created. It's a good question, this. What is the most ludicrous thing you've ever done in the name of love?
Oh, God.
It wasn't exactly love.
Ooh, there is a thing. Yeah, I can't share that. There is a thing.
Ah.
One day I'll share it.
Ah.
When Ben's divorce comes through.
When I'm 60 and really don't care, I'll tell you.
Ah. No, nothing?
No, sir.
No, okay. First failure for artificial intelligence. So I will ask you one of my questions, and we'll get back and we'll talk more about your careers in a second. If you could go into a chrysalis, dissolve, and come out as anything you wanted, what would you come out of the chrysalis as?
Batman.
Batman? Good.
Ben Wilbond.
Wow.
That'd be nice.
Really? I'd like to see what that's like. I mean, a lot of it would be sitting opposite me and getting hit on.
Oh, God.
Only because you never quite know what to do.
Oh, God.
Moth to a flame.
Unbelievable.
I think a young Ben Wilbond, I would like to experience
what
that.
What are you saying?
I'm saying now he's a married man. It wouldn't be. I'd like to experience the youth of Ben Wilbond.
Oh my God. That sounds like one of those direct-to-video films.
Oh,
the youth of Ben Wilbond.
It's mainly me just stuttering at people, being a bit shy.
Aww. It was just creaky, creaky noises coming out of your mouth until the knees took over, wasn't it?
I'm just putting all these knee references down in a book.
In a knee ledger. Don't drop it, because you'll never pick it up.
And this is why he's the best.
Well, I do remember you you were very successful quite early on, weren't you, in terms of Edinburgh
Awards.
Sorry,
which one of us were you talking about?
Oh, Ben, yeah, sure. You're very handsome, you're in Priority a Gauche, which I'd forgotten that was you for a little while, and then I've obviously remembered it's you now, I remember. Yeah. But it does seem like it is a while ago, it's 20-odd years ago.
It was, but it was some of the best fun I think I've ever had. Because it was all stage. We just, you know, we were doing multiple Edinburghs and, I can't really miss that. There's no way I'd be able to do it now. It's far too energetic. But it was great. It was really good fun. Really good fun.
And how did you do that for 5 or 6 years? The idea was a sort of French...
Yeah, it was a French, it was a French rap duo.
Yeah.
Because me and my then... comedy partner Arnold Willison, we both studied French, and the degree was used to very good effect. We weren't asked to join the Foreign Office. We were we just made up a French rap duo from Paris. We actually went to play in Paris. That was interesting. Yeah, that was interesting. And we once opened at the some music awards as a joke. It was clearly a joke. And we went on stage and there were so many famous people in the crowd, so many musicians and people. And there were people actually on their feet going, "Get off, you're awful." They're real hatred. And then afterwards, so we just did it. And we, you know, it was like a gig. We got paid paid quite well for it. And then afterwards, this guy came up, and bless him, I still think about him sometimes. He went, so hi. So I know you got booed, but I think you guys are really good. Because he thought we were, you know, not, we couldn't speak. And I said, sorry, mate, we're sorry. It's an act. He went, cool. Yeah, I knew that. You didn't. I felt quite sorry for him.
Cool. And you wrote for Peter Rabbit.
Oh, yeah.
Were you, my son was obsessed with this show for a long time, and there's a Peter Rabbit world.
Yeah.
Way in near St. Albans somewhere.
Is it just a series of holes?
There is. You could go.
Going to call it Peter Rabbit World.
Pre lockdown, we went quite. It's called Willows. It's quite good actually. Right. It's expensive. You could go and you could meet the characters. And yeah. there was Mr. Todd's house. My son loved Mr. Todd. Like, yeah. And all through lockdown, all he wanted to do was see Mr. Todd.
Yeah.
And so which is wrong because he's the villain. But I did agree with him. Were you ever tempted to write an episode where he successfully killed the horrible rabbits? Because they're very, even without James Corden playing them, they're fucking annoying.
Well, but first of all, the series has no affiliation to the James Corden fronted film.
To be very clear.
Is there any way of being clearer? I was.
But does it have any affiliation to Cats, the musical, or the movie?
None official.
No, none official.
No. Again, both don't have visible bum holes. No, I turned up for that. We'd been at the children's BAFTAs, and
the chafters, we used to call
them. The chafters. And I accidentally got really, really drunk. because of Martha Howe Douglas had made me. And then I remembered at about 4 a.m, we'd gone back, we were in the hotel, me, Martha and Jim, and we'd gone through like the little goodie bag you used to get and pulled out all the miniatures and getting oh God. And then at about 4 a.m, I was like, oh God, I've got to go and write for Peter Rabbit in a minute. And that was my first day. And so I was like, everyone out, I've got to go to bed. And I had like 2 hours sleep, got up, got there, got to, it was writing at a place on the Strand, fell over and I'm crossing the road and got into the meeting 10 minutes late with went to shake the guy's hand. He's now a friend of mine. He's very, very lovely. He's a showrunner. And I went to shake his hand and I realised I had bits of gravel and blood. And shook his hand, and I was like, I've got to come back from this. So I sat there for the day, and everyone else was kind of quite quiet. And he's day one, quite quiet and sheepish. And then they were like, has anyone got any ideas? And I was like, I've got ideas! And at the end of the day, they were like, God, could you come to this every day? Because you are full of ideas. And I was like, I can't come tomorrow. so it was actually quite a short-lived gig. Because I came up with so many ideas on that day one, they kind of put our names in the credit for the whole series.
Terrific.
Get drunk, kids, and you can have a successful career in children's animation. Terrible.
I'm very glad I asked about that now. yes, and also, there's loads of solo stuff that I found quite... You also played Philip May in the Tracy Ullman. You played Theresa May's husband.
Yeah, yeah.
With Tracy Ullman being... Yeah. Theresa May. That's
amazing.
I mean, I don't know if you're old enough to remember Tracy Ullman.
Oh my goodness!
In the early days,
yeah.
But she was But obviously, well, I mean, she went to America.
I was aware of her from being a kid, which I said really early on when I met her, and she was like, "Thank you." But obviously, what I knew was that she'd gone to America and just become this huge, huge star.
Yeah.
And then had come back over here to make a show for the BBC. And it was Caroline who produced Horrible Histories that sort of got me involved. And obviously, I was like, so there's this performer, a British performer, who's gone over to America for like 25 years, become huge, multi-award winning. How many shades of difficulty is this going to be?
Yeah.
And when in the first day's writers' meeting, and she's just... She's so ridiculously lovely. Right. It's almost offensive. You're like, oh, come on, you should have learned to be more of an asshole by now. You've been in America. And it was just, it was the loveliest gig. And she, you kind of, one of those things where you've really, like, learned so much. And a proper, like, polymath. She had, a producer's head, a writer's head. She was a performer, as an actor, but she could also, sing and dance and just, and all of it to that same level.
Yeah.
And so I just went in and I was just like, just try to say the words in the right order. don't try and compete here because you're going to lose. But it was another opportunity to try some really exciting prosthetics.
Yes. Kind of did,
which I like. Yeah. I genuinely do like that, luckily, because otherwise I'd have a horrible career. But they kind of did it and then put my glasses on. And I was like, I look just like, oh, my God, I'm Reg Christie. it was kind of Philip May by way of a serial killer.
Sure.
Now, the two are unrelated.
The Simpsons originated on the Tracey Ullman show. There were, sketches inside the Tracey Ullman show. Do you think she bore a grudge about that throughout the rest of her life? Or did she get a little cut of every Simpson
episode?
Percentage
of that.
I couldn't tell you about the financial agreement, but certainly when we spoke about it, she was incredibly, as she is about everything, incredibly effusive and gracious and sort of, spoke about the early days and seeing it and going, I think there's something special in that. And probably not true. She probably went, those bastards.
Coming
they're
going to
take their idea and they're going to... Tracey Ullman also being played by Rhys Shearsmith for some reason.
You're going to take my idea, aren't you?
I'm so sorry. I want to apologize. I'm going to have to, next time I see Rhys, I'm going to have to really apologize.
Yeah, you are.
Because you know what he gets like. Oh, you're going to take the mic, aren't you?
Scrap. Hate it. Scrap.
And I don't remember much about this, Ben, but you were in a sketch show with Laura Solon and Marit
Marwood. That's okay. No one remembers much about that.
But that's an extraordinary cast. Yeah. What happened there?
Nobody watched it. It was on ITV2.
Okay.
And we had a meeting with them, and they went genuinely. They said, "Look, guys." There's no easy way of saying this. Do you think you could go out and, create a bit of interest somehow? I'm not saying go and do something crazy in town, but, could you go and... I don't know. I think they wanted us to kind of go and smash a bar up. We were three very polite, shy people. Just making a sketch show. It was a genuinely lovely experience. And Laura went off, moved to... Hollywood. And I still see Marek and adore him. And we had a great time.
It's sort of so interesting with... I mean, there's so many sketch shows sort of given a small run, like one series or sometimes four episodes.
Yeah.
And it's not enough, is it?
No, they're always...
I mean, I think Horrible
this.
History shows that as well, because Horrible History has so many series
and
still making series of it. And then it's going to be...
It's funny, we always say with sketch shows, and there was a kind of discussion coming back recently about, because they just put Big Train back on. I think there was a bit in the press about how sketch shows are great, aren't they? And they go, yes, they are. And I always wanted to make them because I always loved doing multiple, multi-character stuff or just characters that would recur and you could write little neat little sketches. They're always really good fun to do, but inevitably they require so much material. You are going to have audience favourites and then the one sketch doesn't quite work.
Yeah.
And it's just the nature of them. But what I just remember on that having, so much fun, so much fun. I don't know who to ask to get... I've lost the... I think they gave us them all on CD. It was that long ago.
Yeah.
There's no digital... there's no, nothing... You can't sort of get them.
Yeah. I mean, it feels, but then there's...
I'd love to see it again.
There's loads of things that you hear of a cast in a sketch, you go, that must have been... I did a sketch show in Edinburgh only, that got a little bit of TV interest at the end, but it really didn't work, with Steve Coogan, Patrick Marber, Simon Munnery, Stuart Lee and me did a sketch show
together. Where are they now?
They've all... None of them are hosting their own podcast, I'll tell you that. which you just sort of think that should have been amazing, but it didn't quite. It nearly did, but it didn't quite gel. So it's, there's all those opportunities, those alternate universes where things could have gone different.
I think I had my first is we were all really young and inexperienced. That set, and we've done loads of stage stuff, But it was that first moment where I thought, oh, my God, this is going to go out on telly. And every sketch, I was like, oh, God, this is going to go out on telly. And obviously you get used to that and you get more experienced and you get hardened to it and you then write appropriately. So you write... You just it's just a matter of experience. When you do it for the first time, it is terrifying.
Yes, of course.
Used to me, hasn't
it? You've been out in America. You've been out in America as well.
Yeah,
doing stuff. Is that like a different?
That was crazy. That was like doing so the CBS Ghosts version. It's so weird because I was hired to do a show called Playing House, and it was about this these two women who were raising a child because the husband had left one of the. One of the pair, and they would sort of left, and it was a really good-natured show, and they wanted me. they phoned me up and said, "We'd love you to play this doctor, and he's the love interest." And I was going, "Okay," and he's British, and he's kind of like, you know, they had this vision of this kind of British guy, and I was on set, and my first day, I was just saying these lines, and the rhythm of comedy there is so different, so quick, and it's all in the accent. It sounds obvious, but it just is so different. And here was me going, so no, I don't think you should do that. It just cut the rhythm massively.
Right.
It was such a weird experience. I can't explain it well enough, but being on that set and sort of being very, very British and trying to be really charming, and it just sort of, everyone's sort of looking
at
me.
Yeah, I can see that not working.
I just felt very, it's a very odd experience because you're not quite in the same rhythm as them. It's very, very odd experience. But I did enjoy it massively.
Right.
I got to sort of hang out in LA and try and be Batman, but it didn't work out.
Is that what you would like though? Or
no, of course
no,
not.
No, I mean, but it's but like it's sort of that weird thing where people go to America and...
Yeah. I look, I was glad I went when I did. I think if you go as a sort of young hopeful, and you go for pilot season, and you're sort of in your mid twenties, and it is very dreamy. It's like this. It is like a kind of. It's got this real magic about it, and you're hanging out with. You're going to parties. But when you get beyond that, and you're a little bit more cynical, you're like, I can see all this. This is nonsense. You take meetings and be like, we're so excited to see you. You go, no, you're not. You've got lunch with Jeff in 5 minutes. And I, you know, I'm just this guy trying to be charming and witty, but the rhythm's wrong. You know it, and I know it.
And was that one series and then...
It was their last series. It was always going to be their last series.
Oh, okay.
But I made some great friends and I got to work with Keegan-Michael Key.
Yes, I saw
him. Who's unbelievably brilliant and funny, and just to make him look... Because I'd seen his sketch show.
Yeah.
And I was so in awe and I was so nervous. And I was like, hey, man. Trying to be really cool. And I made him laugh loads once, and that was enough for me. I went, that's it, retiring, that's it.
Book a plane home.
Yeah. It was fun.
And you've worked on another sitcom recently called We're Not Alone, which is a really good idea. I haven't seen very much of it, but I've seen some clips of it. It looked like a really great idea. So it's about aliens coming to Earth and integrating into human society.
Fun and games.
Fun and games.
It was.
Fun and games.
No, it was one of these proper labour of love projects. And it was sort of Ben had sort of pitched. Actually, you just mentioned it in passing in lunch break.
Yeah,
and
I mentioned
as a sort of short film
idea
about people being in the back of a taxi and sort of just briefing someone just out of shot going, when we get there, just don't mention too much about interest rates because people don't like that. And if anything comes up about the whole nuclear problem, then just say that there's something that's under discussion. Oh, and if anyone asks, you don't eat cats. And it turns around, it's just an alien. It goes, bloody hell, you can't do anything around it. And we love that idea of kind of going, just sort of throwing an alien race into the ridiculous position of trying to run the country / manage humans.
Yeah, it's just like working out humanity because the world's gone nuts. I just remember, when on the eve of Brexit, I think it was then that I... No, maybe it was Trump's election, two very close occasions. And I remember tweeting, wouldn't it be good if the aliens were just hiding on the dark side of the moon? Just going, I think we should probably do it now. Should we do that?
Yeah.
I just love the idea that they, you know, superior race come down and just are baffled by humanity.
Yeah.
Like, what are you doing?
It's a great idea. Well, it's sort of like V, a comedy version.
That was
a
very big deal.
It's comedy V.
Yeah.
Although, V, oh, God, V. So low rent.
Have you seen the clip of the eating of the guinea pig?
Oh, it's amazing.
Is it a rabbit? It's some large rodent.
Eating rodents. Let us have dinner. Yes, let us have dinner. They made that mistake of going, let's investigate what the aliens do. Don't do that. You don't need to get into that. It's not Star Trek.
But it was brilliant. I mean, it was the weirdest production. We were filming in Runcorn, the geographical middle of nowhere. And sort of, so it's set in Clitheroe, but we were filming most of it in Runcorn in January. There are no poems called Runcorn in January.
Well, there are, because I wrote six of them.
I mean, it was a most incredible cast, you know, Joe Thomas and Mike Wozniak and Vicky Pepperdine. I mean, just everyone we had there were just
Mike,
like...
Mike Wozniak is an alien.
Amazing.
Just...
Yeah.
Amazing. Yeah, good fun. But according to UK TV, they decided not to pick it up.
Well, although the actual story is, it was commissioned and then they couldn't pay for it. We have scripts and we have
scripts
people,
and plans.
Good. Yeah, it's
and
a
people
great,
who like those scripts.
It's a good idea, but it looked very high budget, really. There's a kind of shots of the
I'm glad it looked like that.
There's people
oh my goodness.
I'm glad you said that because we had so many times what I now like to call the horse conversation, right. Which is when you do anything period or sci-fi or anything that's got any sort of ambition like that, you go, right, so there's a team of guys, there's 10. There's 10 guys on horses, and then you have the, sorry, just to bring this up again, we actually can't afford 10 horses. We can afford one horse. Had that conversation so many times. You'll notice in Bill, there is a man on a horse.
One man, one horse.
That is the only horse we could afford.
Well, that's the reason Holy Grails with COVID.
Right, exactly. And we didn't learn from that. It's like, we can't afford the horses.
What we love is the director of Bill always says, one of the great things is, in the end of the film, when they're in sort of the palace, behind them all is this big red curtain that cuts off half of Selby Abbey that we used to double for the palace. And he went, it's so rare in a film that you can literally see where the money stops.
Yeah, we call it the money curtain now. Can see the curtain.
Can we dress this church? Curtain. We can dress half a church.
Yeah, I remember talking to the director of photography and was going, I've got enough lights for half of it.
But it's sort of crazy if you guys and all the success you've had and it's still struggling to to get the budget fit. What chance does anyone have if you guys?
I think
can't?
It was always tricky, particularly
you have no
with
chance.
don't even try.
Because with the alien
or
thing was
bring
such
a horse.
If you can bring your own horse, it's all. Actually, I did shoot something for free where they gave us the horse. The trick is don't try and pay for the horse. Just ask to borrow a horse.
The nice man who owns the place where we filmed provided all the chickens. And goes, I've got chickens if you want chickens and sheep. Yeah.
He was brilliant. They owned a castle and he was so lovely. And his little kid at the time, who's now won't be, but were in the film. And they had a lovely down set and they were so helpful. And at the end of the day, bearing in mind we're filming in a castle, went, oh, we've had the most wonderful day. You really should come out to the big house.
Yeah. I love the way they say big house. Because you go, or small house. I met somebody who went, I'm afraid you're going to have to stay in the small house. You go, is that the small house over there? 3 miles away that I can see.
Yeah.
And so what do we know what's coming up next? Have we got any hints of what you might be doing?
We've just we're just about to finish a book, Companion for Ghosts, yeah. which has been really good fun,
really
actually, to sort of... Because it's kind of a world-expanding thing. It's about sort of a treasure trove of documents relating to the lives of the ghosts. So a lot of it is kind of gags and bits of texture that we wanted to put in the show that never fitted within the story.
Yeah, some little storylines that have, you know, were always there in the big storyline document
right.
that you know, we can then...
Yeah. The captain's menu for Cocksock.
Yep.
Very nice it is too.
You're going to get the Cocksock menu.
Yeah, yeah. Robin's annotated by Alison, complete history of the world.
Yeah, that's a gem.
Skimps on some detail, a bit too heavy on others.
What else are we doing? I've challenged all the other ghosts to a cage fight, so yeah. We'll see how that goes next year. You're in training.
Yeah. I could win a cage fight. Not with you.
No.
Well, look, I have to say, as I've said probably already, that it's just so wonderful to have a show like this that's good and that can be enjoyed by, you know, every generation. It's just such a rare... I think, like, this and The Simpsons are the two shows that I can sit down with my kids and watch and we all get something out of it. So it's... It's a fantastic job. Well done, guys. Thank you also for posing for that photo at Operation Mincemeat that I could impress my daughter with. I've just taken another one. I have to tell you, I got it back and she wasn't that impressed.
Well, there you go.
I said, hey, look who I'm with. Who is it?
Who the hell's that?
I said, have a look.
Imagine it with a moustache.
No, she was at the end. When she realised who it was, she was impressed. But no, it's terrific. I hope you will go on to do much, much more. And I hope someone will give you... If I had lots of money, I'd give it to you. If I had 10 horses, I'd give them to you.
Oh, please.
That's all we need.
I can rustle some up. I live near... There's some horses in a field near my house.
Right.
Yeah. So I can just... They're very easy to come by. They're very easy to take.
That's the ridiculous thing. Why are you so expensive? They're everywhere.
But thank you so much for coming on. Ladies and gentlemen, will you please give a massive round of applause for Ben and Larry?
Thanks.
You have been listening to Rahalastapa with me, Richard Herring, and my guests, Ben Wilbond and Lawrence Rickard. Thank you to Scant Regard for providing the music. I'm indebted to my producer, Ben Walker. Thank you very much also, of course, to Chris Evans. Not that one, or that one, and everyone at the Leicester Square Theatre and all the team behind the scenes who keep this going. This is a Sky Potato Fuzz and GoFasterStripe.com production.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Thanks for listening. RichardHerring.com/gigs. GoFasterStripe.com for all my books, downloads, all that sort of shizzle. Oh, yeah, I know all the cool words. And would love to see you on the Can I Have My Ball Back tour if you can make it. Bye.